Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode Forward Thinkers. Mein Name ist Daniel Fürck und mein heutiger Gast ist Gianpiero Petrilieri. Der italienische Psychiater und Professor für Organisationsverhalten an der Business School in Seed gehört weltweit zu den einflussreichsten Stimmen, wenn es um die Zukunft von Führung, Identität und Zusammenarbeit geht. In seiner Arbeit verbindet er psychologische Tiefe mit gesellschaftspolitischem Weitblick und stellt unbequeme Fragen zur Rolle von Macht, Kontrolle und Vertrauen in modernen Organisationen. Ich habe ihn im Rahmen des Nordic Business Forums in Helsinki getroffen und wollte von ihm wissen, wie gute Führung heute überhaupt noch gelingen kann, wenn Loyalität brüchig geworden ist, Kontrolle nicht mehr wirkt und Sinn längst wichtiger ist als Zugehörigkeit. Wir sprechen über Haltung, Empathie, über Gesten statt Worte und über Freundschaft als vielleicht am meisten unterschätzte Zutat gelingender Führung. Wenn dir diese Episode von Forward Thinkers gefällt, folge uns bei Spotify, Apple Podcasts oder wo auch immer du gerne Podcasts hörst und hinterlasse uns eine gute Bewertung. Diese Episode findest du auch als Videopodcast auf unserem 48 Forward YouTube-Kanal.
In an ever-changing world, we need to keep track of what will be next. Forward Thinkers is your 48 Forward podcast to discover the future. We are talking to innovative and creative minds from all over the world to learn more about what they are working on and what they think will change the way we work and live within the next decade. Are you ready to join the ride? Welcome to Forward Thinkers.
Gianpiero, it's nice to meet you here in Helsinki right after your VIP session on stage.
It's great to meet you, Daniel.
Thank you so much for joining the show.
My pleasure.
I listened to what you said on stage and I'm trying to figure out how we actually can implement a new form of leadership in a world where we still, from my point of view, have way too many leaders who have a love for control and trying to...
You and I don't?
I'm not sure if I really want to control everything.
But you want to control something.
Something, yeah. But in the end, if I have the feeling that everything works, I don't want to control anything, you know?
Precisely. Precisely.
In the best case, I would have a corporate culture, like a team that really kind of identifies with what they are doing, not so much maybe, I'm not sure if they really have to identify with the company, but with the thing they are doing.
Precisely. See, that's a very contemporary view you have as a leader. You don't want them to identify with the company. Well, you actually secretly wish they identify with the company, but you know you cannot longer say it publicly. You cannot say it on air. And so you say, fine, you don't identify with the company, but I need you to identify with your work. And you see, I think that's one of the greatest shifts we've seen over the last decades, right? There is no longer an expectation that people are identified with their institutions, but we actually identify more and more with what we are doing. And I think that's fine. I think that's okay. But what that generates is a certain decoupling of commitment from loyalty. You know, the reason why you say that is because you say, I know I can't promise and I cannot expect long-term loyalty in this day and age, but I still want commitment. And so what you need to make sure is that the work you provide is meaningful, right? And what does that mean? That it allows me to express myself, to also develop myself, but also allows me to be of service, of use to the world in some way. Maybe not to the whole world, not to everyone, but at least to some part of the world and some group of people.
So in the end, it's about purpose and how people feel about their impact on certain things and their environment and maybe, which also could be just like very defined market or niche or whatever, but they want to feel an impact with what they are doing.
I think we all do. I think we always have wanted to. It's just, as you said, I think you nailed it. we are much less inclined to seek that purpose in belonging to an organization, and we're likely to seek it in belonging to an occupation, to a group of people that do a certain thing for a certain market, for a certain group of customers, for a certain niche. And I think that the value of that is that if you happen to no longer require my services, then I can still take my identity with me in some other place that offers similar work. And so there's an element of protection of my identity and of my marketability in a world that is relatively unpredictable, in a kind of job market that's very fluid. And there's also an element of fluidity that's always valuable. It allows me to get opportunities that I might otherwise not have had. So I don't think we just want to be purposeful. I also think we want to be portable. And if we find a leader like you who says, fine, I'm happy for you to be portable as long as, you know, you bring yourself fully to the work we're doing here, then I think I'm pretty happy. And I think that's a very contemporary way of conceiving leadership. I'm not going to offer you loyalty, but I'm going to offer you opportunity to do good work, and I'm going to offer you learning on a good day.
So if people don't identify with the company they work for as they, well, that's another question if they ever had, but nowadays, if they don't identify with the company so much anymore, how do I still make sure as a leader that they at least identify with the values I want to see?
Well, how did you know that you could trust? When people, like, let's play with your scenario, because I think that is too stark a distinction. I think people still do identify with companies and organizations more than we admit, even if it's kind of become unpopular to say it. I do think we long for collectives. And in fact, when they identify less with companies, then what they do, they identify more with political movements or with other kind of collectives. And I'm not sure if those are more or less problematic than companies. But let's stick with companies, okay? Here, we're talking about business. How did you know you could trust the values of the company?
Well, in former times, I would have said because the company is successful and we are earning money and it works. But nowadays, I would say it's different because you have to figure out what is the whole environment of that company looking like. Where are we kind of positioning ourselves?
That's right.
And what do we want to see, or how do we want to be seen out there?
That's right. See, I still think people, whether in the past or now, if they identify with the company, it's because they believe the company isn't just successful, but is successful in a particular way. So it's successful representing a certain set of values, a certain way of being in the world. So, you know, of course we need to make money because we need to continue to exist. But the reason why I identify is not just because we make money, unless my value, one of my core values, is, you know, economic growth, in which case a company that says we're just here to make money, I identify with that because that's a value. You know, to even to say we don't care about values, that's a very strong value statement. And if I agree with that, then I identify with the company, I seek the company that tells me that nothing else matters here other than your ability to produce profit. That's a value. And if I believe in that, I will identify with the company as long as I see the company consistently prioritizing the pursuit of profit. Otherwise, I start seeing a crack between the principle and the practice, and that crack threatens my identification. Now, the same is true in the scenario you're describing, in which I'm not going to try to invite you to identify with this large company and its value here. I'm offering something more modest. Identify with this team, with the work we're doing, with this project. And you're actually saying, you can't trust anything around here, but you can trust me. Then why would I trust you? Well, in the more problematic case, I will trust you because we are similar. And that's very dangerous. Because, you know, one immediate way of trusting is I'm just trusting the people who seem to look and think and act like me. On a better scenario is I trust you for the same reason I trusted a company, because there is a consistency between the principles you espouse and the practices I see. So one way in which you can credibly earn my trust, in which you can ask and sustain my identification, even a very deep, profound, visceral identification, is with your choices and with your gestures. You see, as a leader, you are not just an architect of the organization, you're also a symbol. And, you know, when we talk about cultures or values, these are ephemeral things, all right? We cannot see them up there. They're intangible. What I can see is you. I can see you, I can touch you. You have materiality. And so when I want to know what the values are, what the culture is, I look at your behavior. I look at your choices. I look at your gestures. And that's where the culture is. And that's where the values are. And as long as those choices and those behaviors are consistent with the values you and I supposedly are bringing to life with our work, because that's one of the reasons we work. We work for two reasons. One is for instrumental reasons, to put food on the table and to generate profit so that we can pay the salaries next month. And the other reasons we work is for humanistic reasons, because through our work, we are trying to become someone. We are trying to belong to something. And we're trying to bring some values to life. And if your behavior makes me see that those values are alive, then I'm likely to feel that's a possibility for me as well, right? And suddenly your leadership is not an imposition, is not a request, really is an invitation. It's a way of saying, you know, look, this is possible. If I can do it, you can do it too. See, this is why when we talk about these things like self-awareness or empathy, and people say, oh, this is kind of this squishy, indulgences. I mean, awareness, consistency, empathy for a leader is not an indulgence. It's not an indulgence. It's a necessity. Because by demonstrating those things, you're actually showing people that that's what's expected. And that's what's possible. And the worst thing, the moments in which I really struggle, in which I become stressed and my identification starts to crumble, is when your expectations are violated by what is possible. So you expect something of me in principle, in rhetoric, that then, you know, isn't possible to bring to life in practice, in gestures. And so I'd say, you know, very simply, that's how you make culture. As a leader, you make culture by your choices and your gestures, especially when you allocate resources and distribute rewards. When you say, we're going to invest in this and we're not going to invest in this. We are going to recognize this and we are not going to recognize that. Those are the moments in which I know whether what you say is fluff or whether it's real.
Sie haben nichts gelöscht. Sie haben nichts verboten. Sie haben einfach entschieden, was sichtbar ist. Du konntest sagen, was du willst, nur hat es niemand mehr gehört. Denn Öffentlichkeit war kein Ort mehr, sondern ein Algorithmus, ein Filter, ein System. Democracy Down ist ein Roman über das leise Ende der Demokratie. Ein Journalist erkennt, dass es nicht die Gewalt ist, die die Wahrheit auslöscht, sondern die Struktur. Was wir sehen, was wir teilen, was wir glauben. Alles ist manipulierbar. Nicht irgendwann, sondern jetzt. Democracy Down von Daniel Fürck. Ein Thriller über Sprache als Waffe und Demokratie als Opfer. Jetzt verfügbar. Überall, wo es Bücher gibt.
So, I think in good times when more or less everything is working and the company is successful and there are no threats from the outside, it's probably much easier to be a great leader. But in times of crisis, and especially in the world we are living in right now with all the also economic risks and dangers that threaten companies, it's way more challenging to not forget about corporate culture, about values, about everything connected to it, because leaders are also afraid of what could happen to them, to the company, to their numbers. How do I make sure as a leader that I'm still capable of all those things and not only see like the short-term success of my actions, but also value the long-term effects of my acting?
That's a great question. And I think it's a variation of a very fundamental question, which is, how do I remain human? How do I not let fear destroy my capacity to think, my capacity to stay calm, my capacity to care for others, and become very mechanical, you know, very impulsive, very short-term oriented, and very tribal? You know, because if you think of you and I, you know, our humanity is not a state. It ebbs and flows. And there are moments in which we can really be this very principled and forward-looking and very generous, the word I use is very capacious person. And there are moments in which our horizons shrink. Anxiety really narrows that room, that cognitive capacity we have, that emotional capacity, that relational capacity. And I think the way you keep that capacity is by being grounded in, yes, surely in some principles and some practices, but also in people. I always say colloquially that the answer to all the big questions in work and life and leadership is always the same: friends. You know, you get isolated, you become more anxious. Friends. You get powerful, everyone flatters you, no one tells you the truth. Friends. You get scared and you think you cannot do it, you lose confidence, you lose courage. Friends. You cultivate the right connections. And I use this particular way of describing the kind of friends we need when we're leading in a difficult environment. And these are friends of your learning, people that help you think more clearly and broadly when your thinking narrows, people that help you breathe when the pace is accelerating, people that help you think, is this the way you want to act? Is this who you want to be? That remind you of you at, not at your best, at your most human. And I think that's how we do it. The other thing I want to tell you, going back to the premise of your question, if the world was perfect, if there ever was a moment in which the world was perfect, would we need leadership? See, I don't think so. I don't think so. Or maybe we would need leadership just to make sure everything remains the same. But when the world is perfect, I'm busy getting stuff done. I know how to act. I'm enjoying the moment. And for the people that feel in a certain place that their corner of the world is perfect, all they want is nothing to change. And you see, I actually think leadership begins to exist, begins to have its meaning when there is some kind of gap, when there is some kind of distance between the world as I'm experiencing it and the world as I would like it to be. If you think of any leader you can think about in history or right now, no leader shows up and says, everything is fine, people. What they say is, they might say, things are fine now, but if we won't change, they won't be. Or they often say, you know, things are not fine, and we need to get better. So you see, I think leadership, when you think of those choices and gestures that I think manifest your leadership, every time a leadership is moving a muscle, what they're doing is they're closing some kind of gap between ideal and reality. And then we usually say, if we like that ideal, oh, that's a good leader. And if we don't like the ideal, we say that person is crazy. That person is ruining the world. Or they are expanding that gap. And then we say that person has no competence, no integrity, that's not a real leader. That's a scam. But if the gap isn't moving, then I think you're not leading. If there is no gap, you see, any culture that is alive is always changing. And cultures by themselves do become stuck, they become ossified or they kind of fragment. And so leadership is nothing that the work to move our cultures towards some kind of better state. And that better state might be more adaptive, might be more expansive, or it might be, you know, more narrowly defined in the way I think it should be defined. You know, and I think some leaders go both ways. And the way I think about it is some leadership is very tribal. Mm-hmm. I think it's the one that you were hinting you and I don't like, because they say, you know, these cultures have become a mess. Let's just narrow it down, okay, to people like you and I and everyone else we're just going to have to get rid of or keep out of the gates, because this place is no longer perfect and we want it to be more perfect, more pure. But there's also leadership that is more civilized, that says, let's make a bigger party. And if you look at the history of humanity, sometimes we've been able to have that expansive, capacious impulse towards our culture. Let's make it more inviting. Let's open it up, because if more people come in it, then they'll make it more alive. And sometimes we've fallen into that fear that, no, if we do that, we're going to lose it. And therefore, kind of, you know, let's lock the gates and pull out the guns.
So in this very nomadic, remote work environment we are at the moment in these times, my personal thesis, maybe you don't agree, but would love to hear your thoughts on that. We already talked about trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more remote people are working and the more crisis there are out there, the more honesty and transparency you need to work against that disconnection between people. So as a leader, the more honest and transparent you are, also talking about bad topics, the more likely it is that people trust you. Mm-hmm. and the easier it is to also get empathy from the other side if you have to do some hard decisions or if you have to do stuff somebody dislikes, because people will understand why you are doing that. Mm-hmm. If you work on...
Absolutely. No, I completely agree. And so, look, here's the good news. I know we are very enamored with this idea of the world is remote today and people are more distant. But if you kind of broaden the aperture for a second, for a very long time, people have sometimes mistrusted and ignored people who were really close to them. I mean, think how many families there are in which, and maybe you and I were that, mm-hmm. you know, as teenagers, you know, you don't say so much to your parents, and you're having dinner with them every day. You're not remote. So proximity and intimacy are two very, very different things. And the opposite has been true. People have been extremely trusted. I mean, people have died for leaders they never met, that they saw on TV or they read about in a book that, you know, had existed century before, and they were willing to give their life for those leaders. So remoteness is one thing, connection is another. And then, of course, when you do have that remoteness, you need to prioritize the connection. Then I think in some way, the remoteness forces us to think about what is that create a connection between you and I. And again, I go back to that idea, then either we are similar, then maybe we can assume that trust for a short moment. And if we are remote and different, then we're going to have to work. Then we have to manifest curiosity and courage. Courage to articulate why we're here, what we're trying to do, why it matters, and curiosity about why are you here? What are you trying to do? Why does it matter to you? So it's not just a matter of me telling you, but it's also a matter of me asking. You know, I think courage is great and curiosity is even better. And sometimes I think in leadership, especially in the discourse and the practice of leadership, we overvalue the courage to act, to say or do something when it will be easier or safer to shut up and stand still. And I will I will agree that that's very important. You know, it's what makes you credible, what makes you noticed. But there's another kind of courage that's also important in leadership, and it's the courage to ask, the capacity to question things that we take for granted. Maybe my own belief when it would be a lot easier and safer to just keep going. And you see, I think the courage to act is what gets you noticed, but the courage to ask is what keeps you safe. And you need both. If you just have the courage to act without the courage to ask, we see a lot of that around today, then you're a fundamentalist. You're not a leader. You have only beliefs. You have no ideas. If you have the courage to ask without the courage to act, then you're a philosopher, which might be great. But I think in leadership, you need both. And the more remote, the more different we are, the more courage and more curiosity we need in order to forge a genuine connection. But it's not, the problem is not the remoteness, and it's not even the differences. Humans have been able to connect across long distances and vast differences throughout history, and at times have lost that capacity. And when that capacity is lost, then usually two things result. One is ignorance, and the other one is warfare.
Which kind of brings us back at the end to the idea of friends, because the best friends are sometimes not the ones you see on a daily basis, but the ones that are there if you need them, mm-hmm. or if you are needed by them. And you have this strong connection, maybe even with people who you only see once or twice a year.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Lots of people are kind of soft friends. You know, they help us close the gap between who we fear becoming and, you know, who we are on our average day. But our best friends are the people who show up and help you close the gap between who you are in your average day and who you could be on your best day. And sometimes when they do that, they're a bit annoying, you know, and because they tell you the truth. And yet, if they weren't there, you would remain a creature of habit. You would lose your courage and you would lose your aspirations.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for being a good friend of these ideas.
Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy the episode? Follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your favorite podcast shows. Forward Thinkers is a 48 Forward podcast produced in the 48 Forward Studios in Munich.